Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast, broadcasting from Peculiar, Missouri. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here at home at the homestead in Peculiar, Missouri, which is 20 miles south of Kansas City. It's my homeland. It's where I grew up. I'm from Raymore, Missouri, Peculiar area. And I went to Raymore High School. Some of you already know that. Some of you don't know. Because I noticed the other day when I posted a story about that Cecil the Lion, I posted a photograph of myself when I had hunted my first trophy deer. That people were surprised. They thought, oh, you're a city boy. Wow. Well, I've lived in the cities for the last 11 years, but as of last night, I moved back to Missouri to be closer to my family and, to get away from the heart of darkness, as one of my friends said yesterday, and to be a little bit closer to my roots, because as I am demonstrating right now, I can run this business from anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, really, as long as I have an internet connection. And I've got a little wireless Netgear hockey puck here that is broadcasting my internet, and I can sit out here and talk about all the issues with you guys no matter where I am. So if you hear all these noises in the background, what you're hearing is the majesty of nature, ladies and gentlemen. And speaking of majesty of nature, you know, I had to go out to my truck this morning to get something, and I thought, oh man, I better get some pants on. Then I realized there's nobody for miles. Nobody knows. So I just wandered right outside and grabbed what I needed from my truck and headed back in, and nobody's the wiser, except for you, because you just heard me describe walking in my underwear on the podcast. So, I have my tolerance for embarrassment is low. It has to be low if you're going to be somebody like me. If you're going to do what I do and have a show like this, you got to be able to be embarrassed. And Lord knows I lost my capacity for being embarrassed long ago when I majored in musical theater. Yes, that's right, musical theater. But today, enough about me, enough about my move, enough about me personally. I want to talk about something that is extremely important to the liberty movement right now, and that is the campaign of Senator Rand Paul. And it's an important one because I noticed while I was moving and packing up and getting across the country and dropping things off that there was all of this sort of hubbub about Rand Paul's campaign going down the tube, swirling around the drain, as someone says, and that, you know, that he's that his campaign is faltering, and that Donald Trump is occupying the space that Rand Paul needs to occupy. And some of these criticisms are valid. Some of these criticisms are warranted, and some of them are not. But if there are criticisms that are warranted, there are political rules that come into play when we have these criticisms that we need to apply. And I am going to discuss some of these political rules for you, and they come straight from a man who I have great respect for, Morton Blackwell, who is the head of the Leadership Institute in Washington, D.C. And I'm going to read to you some inspiration from Breitbart, some information about Rand Paul's campaign that should give you a little bit of hope. And then I'm going to read to you direct from the Founding Fathers. Baby. I'm going to read to you some inspiration from the Founding Fathers, specifically Thomas Paine and Samuel Adams, when the chips were down for the Founding Fathers. This was what they read to give inspiration to the troops, to the Loyalists, Loyalists were loyalists to the British, but to the people who were loyal to the Revolution. And so I want you to take heart, ladies and gentlemen, and in order to help perk you up, I actually have something really exciting. I have some really exciting news for you guys. And if you're listening right now, you guys are going to get the first hint at what at an opportunity that will both serve your country and serve your pocketbook. So before we discuss the campaign of Senator Rand Paul, let's talk about some way that you can actually help Rand Paul and make some money at the same time. Let me tell you this really exciting news. Now, this is technically an advertisement, what I'm getting ready to tell you. And it is an advertisement that is not sponsored by any candidate or candidate's campaign. I'm required by law to say that because it's sponsored by a super PAC called Purple PAC. And Purple PAC it is just what it sounds like. Purple PAC is a super PAC that is dedicated to making a difference in states that matter. So the purple states, where there are the swing states, the super PAC, Purple PAC, is doing a big contest, and it's just for you guys, you Rand Paul supporters, to participate. And how you can participate is to give us your best idea for how to get Rand Paul elected president. Now, that sounds simple, right? Well, it is. Now, here's what we're doing. We're giving away $10,000, okay? I mean, I'm going to read from the Samuel Adams quote about if you love wealth better than liberty. Well, we libertarians, we're hardcore capitalists, so we love wealth and liberty. And so this contest is for you guys to make $2,000. We're going to give away to five people $2,000 apiece. So $10,000 total in prizes for whoever can come up with the best ideas for how to get Rand Paul elected president. Now, what is that? What can that be? That can mean a mobile phone application. What if you came up with an idea for a phone application that would unite libertarians across the country? Like, let's say you get on Facebook and you find the Making Friends Through Rand Paul. Shout out to my crew. The Making Friends Through Rand Paul group. And everybody who's a member of that group is connected through this application. What if that's how you give us an idea for how to make Rand Paul, elect Rand Paul president? And this mobile phone application that could be developed would be a way for us to get out the vote across the United States. Or what if you had an idea for a video, like a campaign video that would go mega viral, and you could create something that would totally revolutionize this country and inspire everyone to be a patriot? Well, it could be anything. So here's what we're doing. Purple Peck is giving away $2,000 to five people with the best ideas on how to get Rand Paul elected president. Now, again, it can be anything. It can be, you know, it can be a video, it can be a mobile phone application, it can be any idea that you can think of, and it will be judged by three people who are the head of the Super PAC. Now, I know what you're saying, Austin, it sounds too good to be true. Well, it's not. You know your good buddy Leif Beberson would never lead you astray. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to Purple PAC, that's P-U-R-P-L-E, Purple PAC.org/contest. Okay? So purplepack.org/contest, and you're gonna go to that website and you're gonna sign up. Okay? Now when you get there, you'll see a little form on all that, some information about the contest. Go to purplepack.org/contest and send us your best idea. Now this is only in the month of August. Now and you can submit as many ideas as you want. Isn't that great? So let's say you've got five great ideas. We'll submit them all. Submit your best ideas for how to get Rand Paul elected president, and you can win 2,000 big ones. Dollarinis, dinero. So do me a favor, go to that website, and don't forget, this is not paid for by any candidate or candidate's committee. Okay? So thanks very much for that advertisement. Now let's take a pause for just a moment. And we're back. So don't forget to sign up for that purplepack.org contest. You've got it going on all the month of August, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm really excited to see what you guys have to come up with. Remember, purplepack.org/contest. All right, now moving on. So a lot of these criticisms that have been leveled at Rand Paul from people that are our buddies, so you know, like this recent piece I'm going to read from by Jonathan Bidlack, he says he's tired of defending Rand Paul, and he's calls himself a supporter who's conflicted. And let me just start by saying I've known Jonathan for a long time. I've known Jonathan since the 2008 Ron Paul presidential campaign, and I consider him a good friend. And I respect what he has to say, although I differ on a few of the things. But I'd like to go through this article and then talk point by point about some of these issues here. And just an FYI, ladies and gentlemen, there's no way I'm going to be able to get away from my nephew who is here with me today. So when you hear the little kid talking up there, I could go to the end of this farm and he would follow me. So if you hear him talking in the background, that's what it is. And I'm not going to yell at him and tell him to go away. So anyway, let's talk about this. So Jonathan Bidlack says, since serving as Ron Paul's fundraising director in 2008, he's been asked what made Congressman Paul so popular. You know, he was able to raise so much money online. In recent months, a new question has replaced the old ones. Will his son be able to do the same? Earlier this year, when reporters began calling to ask for my predictions about how Paul the Younger's fundraising momentum would compare to his father's, he behaved as he thought was appropriate. Jonathan says he hedged. He bit his tongue, and he answered cautiously. Jonathan says, through it all, I haven't said what now seems increasingly obvious. There is little chance that Rand Paul's momentum will ever match that of Ron Paul. The unfortunate reason is clear. Rand Paul doesn't stand for much of anything anymore. Dismal headlines this week in Politico, Rand Paul's downward spiral, The Washington Post, the most interesting man in politics isn't drawing much interest in New Hampshire, and the Daily Beast, the cancer on Rand Paul's campaign, all but write an obituary for what was supposed to be a generation-shifting campaign. Regardless of whether one is inclined to believe the media, it's no longer possible to ignore the fact that Paul's support is slipping. His New Hampshire numbers have dropped from 14% in February to just 4%, according to a poll released Sunday. By comparison, Ron Paul received nearly 8% of the state's vote in 2008 and over 22% in 2012. Senator Paul's national ratings, though they matter little at this point, and that's key, have also dropped. A Quinnipiac University poll released Thursday put Paul at 6% in a four-way tie for fourth place. Senator Paul has raised significantly less than most major candidates, pulling in $6.9 million, including a $1.6 million transfer from his Senate committee. Affiliated super PACs have raised only $5 million. Actually, Jonathan, it's $7 million if you count Purple PAC. Meanwhile, Jeb Bush's super PAC raised $103 million, and Ted Cruz's got over $37 million. By comparison, in the last two quarters of 2007, Ron Paul, who had literally 0% name ID in an early internal analysis, raised $25 million. Second only to Rudy Giuliani's $26 million. Governor Mitt Romney's receipts were heavily dependent on loans made to his own campaign. Super PACs, of course, were not a factor. In 2007, Ron Paul's success was called astounding. In 2015, Rand Paul finds himself having to explain paltry returns. How did we get here? Perhaps I should start by answering how I got here. And remember, this is Jonathan Bidlack's story. In 2007, he was preparing to transition to his post-college job, and politics wasn't on his radar until he read a story about Ron Paul, the real Republican. I'm paraphrasing what Jonathan said here for brevity. And he was excited by Congressman Paul's vision of the U.S. Constitution. I mean, a limited government, federalism, free trade, commerce, with a premium on peace. And Jonathan says that he was hooked. He joined a meetup group, same thing that I did. And he talks about one little meeting that he had, where it's a small chain restaurant. He was passing around a basket to gather some cash for canvassing supplies, and within 20 minutes they'd raised over $1,000. And he sent his resume in. He got a job with the Paul campaign, and everybody that was a part of that campaign believed deeply in what they were doing. Now that energy turned into a wildly successful fundraising campaign. They raised over $35 million, mostly online and through social media, and that was before Obama, you know, had pulled out his mastering of that craft. Now, Paul had, of course, he had one of the most consistent voting records in Congress. He never changed his message over time. His message was limited government, limited foreign intervention, respect for the individual, sound money, fiscal responsibility. And while Paul was pro-life, he didn't bring up all these social issues to in order to avoid alienating people. I mean, Congressman Ron Paul was a baby doctor. He delivered babies. I mean, you really couldn't be more pro-life than Ron Paul. But Ron Paul was not the type to go out there and campaign against Planned Parenthood or to talk about issues that were divisive, you know. So it's possible to be a social conservative and not be like Rick Santorum and shove it in people's faces all the time. No. Now, of course, Congressman Paul would not be president. You know, he was quirky, you know, he was a little strange to the public, and he didn't make inroads with the GOP because he, you know, angered the GOP leadership. But he did ignite a nationwide movement that I was a part of. Now, enter Dr. Rand Paul. Rand Paul was supposed to be different from Ron Paul. Any serious political observer realized he could not win the nomination holding the same hardcore positions as his father. But Paul's pragmatism has evolved over the years into boilerplate Republican talking points. Today, he's a candidate who has very unique positions on anything. And I totally disagree with Bidlack on that. His recent polling and fundraising numbers show the results of his trajectory. It wasn't always this way. Now, Bidlack, it seems to me that Bidlack is being disingenuous here, because how many Republicans stood with Rand when he was filibustering the NSA? Okay. So, how many stood with Rand when he was filibustering Obama's drone programs, okay? Only Ted Cruz and Mike Lee stood with Rand, okay? So, just because they stood with him, which, you know, only Mike Lee was there for the NSA filibuster, where were the rest of the Republican leadership on that? So don't tell me that Rand Paul isn't different from these other Republican candidates, Jonathan. Again, I got mad respect for you, brother, and I know we're buddies, but you're being disingenuous here. I don't know if Politico edited your story or something, But no, Rand Paul does hold positions that are different from the other GOP mainstream candidates.
I'm ready to eat the other one.
Now, Rand Paul won national acclaim 2 years ago with a well-publicized 13-hour filibuster of the drone policy. So here he's bringing it up. He says Jonathan was excited by that, right? And public opinion on drones changed. Support for targeting American citizens suspected of being terrorists dropped 13 points among Republicans, 17 among Democrats, and 23 points among independents. Now, he polled at or near the top of the field for the rest of the year and through 2014. Now, fast forward to 2015, following a controversial drone strike that killed two alleged American al-Qaeda operatives and two hostages, Rand Paul struck a very different tone. Now, this is true. He said, "I've been an opponent on using drones on people not involved in combat," he said. "But if you're holding hostages, you kind of are involved in combat," he said. "And you don't get due process or anything like that in a war zone." He said that the captors probably got what was coming to him, though he regretted some innocent people lost their lives, including the hostages. Paul's rationale perhaps wouldn't have been noteworthy coming from another Republican, but at a time there was a significant criticism. It was baffling to libertarians that Senator Paul would come to a lame duck Democratic president's defense. Now, Bidlack goes on talking about Paul's call for airstrikes on ISIS, or excuse me, he wanted to declare war on ISIL and put boots on the ground. He'd done a 180 on the threat from Iran, signing the Tom Cotton letter opposing the recent nuclear deal. Now, on the nuclear deal, listen, agreeable people can disagree on that, on the Iran deal. Personally, I support it, just because I think we need to tone down the belligerence in the Middle East and try and find ways to trade with them. You know, Iran as a people, it's the leadership of Iran that we have a problem with. But the people of Iran are young and liberal, good liberal, not bad liberal. And I support the Iran deal for the purpose of free trade and because I think that with capitalism we can accomplish what we can never do with war. It's like with Vietnam. You know, we fought in Vietnam for years and years, but what we couldn't accomplish with war in Vietnam, we accomplished through free trade and diplomacy. And so I support the Iran deal because I think that free trade and diplomacy are the ways to solve our problems. Now, Rand Paul seems to disagree with that. Now, the reason why I think it's okay for people to disagree is because the leadership is not libertarian, okay? The government of Iran is still controlled by the mullahs. And these radical, tyrannical authoritarians that control that government, who do want a nuclear bomb, I believe, for ill purposes, are not our friends. So I think libertarians can come down on either side of that issue. Personally, I believe that the right way is that we need less belligerence, less militarism, and more capitalism. But I have libertarian friends who disagree, and I respect their beliefs. I have libertarian friends who disagree on abortion. You know, they're pro-choice, and I'm pro-life. But again, there are reasonable ways to disagree about this and not say, oh, well, you're not a libertarian. If you want to reduce the role of government in your lives, then I think that you're a friend, okay? So some of the fear-mongering, Jonathan talks about some of the fear-mongering that Paul uses on the Iran deal. Now, politically, you have to understand that people are dumb, okay? Especially the voter, okay? There's really nobody more misinformed than the American voter. Maybe the European voter. Maybe the European voter is a little bit less informed than an American voter, because they vote for hardcore socialism every time. But Rand Paul using fear-mongering? Well, I mean, look at Donald Trump. Compare Rand Paul to Donald Trump. You want to talk about a fear-monger? I mean, it's just so disingenuous to try and say that, oh, Rand Paul's fear-mongering is horrible for libertarians. No, it's not. There are reasonable reasons to be afraid.
Okay?
There are things to be afraid of in this world. And so I think it's important, ladies and gentlemen, that we understand that tactics are not necessarily the same as principles. Okay? Now, he did say some other things that I disagree with. Rand Paul said the gay marriage offends him. He called for tent revivals to combat America's moral crisis while supporting ending marriage licenses altogether, which is a libertarian talking point, of course. He supports lowering sentences for drug offenses and is publicly courting the marijuana industry while very consistently making clear he opposes legalization. And in recent weeks, he's gone so far as to apparently jump onto the Trump bandwagon in seeking to defund sanctuary cities. He spent months reaching out to minority communities and branding himself as a different kind of Republican on police brutality and criminal justice reform. But when Baltimore was burning following Freddie Gray's suspicious death in police custody, Paul couldn't have been more tone-deaf. scoffing how he was glad his train didn't stop in Baltimore, and offering what seemed to be a 1990s-era moral majority musings on the downfall of the family. Well, Jonathan, I am no social conservative, sir, but I think the family is a good thing for society. And I think that, you know, if you're talking about the family, I think that that probably the problems are that in Baltimore and those minority communities do have to fact with the have to do with the breakdown of the family. So again, you don't have to be a social conservative to think that that the family unit is a net positive for society. And if Rand Paul is making those kinds of talking points, well, I'll probably agree with him. And you know, I love my family, but I don't have my own, you know, I don't have my own family, and I don't know, it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon. But again, reasonable people can disagree on these issues. And it sounds like Jonathan Bidlack, like he's upset the same way that I am, and he wants him to be more like Ron Paul, but that's not going to happen. So Rand Paul and his defenders, of which I have frankly grown weary of being part, this is Jonathan, not me, can explain nearly every one of these aberrations from past positions or ideology, but that is not the point. As the old saying goes, politics is like dating. If you're explaining, you're losing. Any political calculation ultimately must be judged on its results. At this point, Rand Paul isn't driving the political debate as his father did, nor does he appear to be likely to succeed electorally. Paul was supposed to inherit the energy of his father's campaign and translate it into electoral victory. He's failing on both counts. Come on, Jonathan. Senator Paul has taken great and ultimately necessary steps to distance himself from the more outside the mainstream positions of Representative Paul, but while he is clearly not his father, the question remains, who is he? If Paul hopes to rebound into front-runner status in the debates, he'd do well to recall the moment that helped launch his father into the national spotlight. In the May 2007 presidential debate, Ron Paul faced a hostile crowd, and Mayor Rudy Giuliani demanding he apologize and take back his statement that U.S. involvement overseas had contributed to blowback. Ron Paul did not timidly agree or adopt a marginally different position. Congressman Paul stood his ground and started a movement. It's time for Senator Paul to revisit that playbook. Now, Jonathan has some good criticisms here, but they're not all well-founded. And again, I feel as if Jonathan is here saying that he wants him to be more like his father. Well, being more like his father isn't going to galvanize these hardcore libertarians because, quite frankly, and while I am one, a lot of us libertarians are nuts, you know? And that's a pejorative, but it's true. You all know it is, you know? And the only thing that's going to make some of these people happy that supported Ron Paul is if Rand Paul comes straight out and says, you know, we've got to let Putin have the Ukraine, and we've got to, we've got to defluoridate our water, and that's a straw man in some ways, right? You know, the fluoridation issue, but you know that there's a basis of reality to that argument, okay? And let me just say, I'm not just trying to denigrate some of Ron Paul's followers, although I happily do that frequently because I hate groupthink, and I hate cultishness, and I hate cult of personality. But let's talk here about some of the political rules that I talked about earlier in the show, which I'd like to discuss with you now. And I'm going to read some of these. These are from Morton Blackwell at the Leadership Institute. These are called the Laws of the Public Policy Process. And there's 45 of them. So some of them I'm going to go through and discuss, and some of them I'll just skip through. But I want you to write some of these down, ladies and gentlemen. If you have a piece of paper, get yourself a piece of paper and a pen right now while I get my nephew, while I try and explain to my nephew that I'm trying to do a show here. Get yourself a pen and paper and write these down, okay? So go get it right now, okay? And Mario, if you could just stay. I'm trying to do a show, so if you could just right now. I'm going to, for my future podcast, I'm going to have to find some, like, corner of the farm I can go hide at. But I need you to, buddy. Okay, so have you got your pen and paper, ladies and gentlemen? Okay. Number one, never give a bureaucrat a chance to say no, okay? Number two, don't fire all your ammunition at once. Fantastic bit of advice there. Number three, don't get mad except on purpose. So use your anger to serve your purposes. Don't let your anger force you to make decisions that you wouldn't have made when you had cooler head. Number four, effort is admirable. Achievement is valuable. Number five, make the steal more expensive than it's worth. Meaning that if somebody was going to steal support from you, make it so that they have to work so hard to do so that it's not worth it for them. Number six, give them a title and get them involved. Okay, that's a fantastic bit of advice there. If you're, this is about grassroots campaigning. But, you know, give your intern a title, right? And let them get involved so that they feel like they're important. Number seven, expand the leadership. That's right, find good leaders. Number eight, you can't beat a plan with no plan, which is why I'm glad that we're having a plan here. And I'm going to go and give you another plug of a, that is not paid for by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Don't forget to go and sign up for Purple Packs contest. Give us your best ideas, $2,000 for the best ideas to help Rand Paul get elected president. So that's my plan, is I'm going to empower you to take your ideas, send them to us, and we will find a way to make them happen. Number nine, political technology determines political success. Number 10, sound doctrine is sound politics. Number 11, in politics you have your word and your friends. Go back on either and you're dead. And that is what is key here. Rand Paul, the people who are standing with Rand, you know, we're friends, guys. We're all buddies. You know, if you're listening this far into the show to me talking, you're probably somebody who cares. Okay, very few people listen all the way to the end of a show, but if you're the type of person who's listening right now, congratulate yourself, and I call you a friend and a brother. Thank you, by the way, for being a good friend and being a good listener. Now, let's move on. Number 12, keep your eye on the main chance, and don't stop to kick every barking dog. Now, that's one that I could, that's a lesson that I can learn, and actually, Judge Napolitano, my buddy, said that to me once. I remember when I was working at Fox with him, he said, he told me this because I was saying, hey, we got to respond to this or we got to respond to that. And he says, Austin, if a dog barks at you, do you bark back? Obviously not. If a dog barks at you, it's a dog. You're not going to bark back at a dog. Don't lower yourself to their level and don't respond to every dog. Number 13, don't make the perfect the enemy of the good. And here we are, exactly what I'm talking about. Don't make the perfect the enemy of the good when it comes to Rand Paul. He is the most limited government candidate in the race. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're on the fence about Rand, it's time to get off the fence. You know, right now is the time when patriots, when people of good conscience must come together and band together, when the chips are down. You know, this is our Valley Forge. This is our time when we have to struggle. And I'm going to go ahead and move on because we've hit the parts of the public policy process that I think are important. And I want to read to you from some of the founding fathers because to me, I think these quotes sum up the heart of the message of what it is we're discussing here. But this is from Thomas Paine, who wrote on December 23rd, 1776, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands by it now deserves the love and thanks of every man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. 'Tis surprising to see how rapidly a panic will sometimes run through a country or a political movement. All nations and ages have been subject to them. Britain has trembled like an ague at the report of a French fleet of flat-bottomed boats. And in the 14th century, the whole English army, after ravaging the kingdom of France, was driven back like men petrified with fear. And this brave exploit was performed by a few broken forces, collected and headed by a woman, Joan of Arc. Would that heaven might inspire some Jersey maid to spirit up her countrymen and save her fair fellow sufferers from ravage and ravishment. Yet panics, in some cases, have their uses. They produce as much good as much hurt. Their duration is always short. The mind soon grows through hurt, through them, and acquires a firmer habit than before. But their peculiar advantage is that they are the touchstones of sincerity and hypocrisy, and bring things and men to light, which might otherwise have lain forever undiscovered. In fact, they have the same effect on secret traitors, which an imaginary apparition would have upon a private murderer. Now think about that, ladies and gentlemen. If we have a problem in our movement, these panics are going to root out those who don't have the guts to fight this battle all the way through. This is our Valley Forge. And if you want to be a part of making something, if you just want to be a part of government, or if you just want to make sure that Hillary Clinton doesn't get elected and that's all you care about, well then please, you know, go support Jeb Bush, you know? Go support Donald Trump, you know? Go support Marco Rubio, or any of those other candidates that the establishment wants, okay? Or Chris Christie, okay? Because, again, if you don't want real change in this country, then why are you claiming to support Rand Paul? And certainly some of you have bolted. You know, as a matter of fact, guess what? This panic outed amongst us. It did out amongst us someone. I won't call him a traitor. He's just a kid. 13-year-old kid by the name of C.J. Pearson. He's just a young little kid. He's 13 years old. And he was on Fox News for supporting Rand Paul. And he sort of became a national sensation for being so young and intelligent and interested in politics. But now he's turned coat on us. And he's out speaking against Rand Paul and libertarians and the liberty movement. And he's now supporting Ted Cruz. Apparently he's flip-flopped on us and he now supports Ted Cruz. That's fine. I mean, there's plenty of good reasons to support Ted Cruz, okay? He's a pretty good guy in many ways. He's not a libertarian. But if he was nominated, which I don't think will ever happen, but it would be much better than a Jeb Bush or a Marco Rubio here. But C.J. Pearson goes and writes the other day, "The liberty movement is so dysfunctional." He's right about that. "It's one of the main reasons they don't and won't win elections. They attempt to eat their own if they don't groupthink." He says, "I'm a conservative because I don't groupthink." And then full rant coming later in an op-ed in the Washington Post. Okay, listen, buddy. There are plenty of reasons to criticize the liberty movement. Groupthink is actually one of the problems that we do have. But if you think that conservatives don't suffer from groupthink, well, kid, you're a lot dumber than people gave you credit for. Okay? Now, CJ, I'm sure that you mean well. You're a young man interested in politics. And while the rest of us are going to be out here fighting in Valley Forge, we will remember you, CJ. We will remember. And, of course, one day you will reach the age of adulthood. And you will look back, and you may never even regret this. But just understand, ladies and gentlemen, that if you are committed to a principle rather than a candidate, then you will stand with me as my brother or my sister in Valley Forge when the times are hard. And I'm standing with Rand, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going anywhere. I will stay with you in Valley Forge, though we have no shoes, no supplies, though we are starving and hungry and cold, I will stand with you and I will stand with Rand until I can stand no more. Because I know that there is no candidate out there who has the guts to stand up to Obama on national security issues like drones, or who has the guts to stand up to Obama on national security issues like the NSA. It's the independents that are going to win this election, ladies and gentlemen. It's not Republicans and Democrats. It's the independents that turn elections. So let me read to you from Sam Adams while I depart this. And this is to you, CJ. This is to you, Jonathan Bidlack. This is to you, ladies and gentlemen, who are seeing the chips down and you are jumping like rats off a sinking ship. This is to you from Sam Adams on the revolution. "When the spirit of liberty, which now animates our hearts and gives success to our arms, is extinct, our numbers will accelerate our ruin and render us easier victims to tyranny. Yet, abandon minions of an infatuated ministry, if peradventure any should yet remain among us. Remember that Warren and Montgomery are counted among the dead. Contemplate the mangled bodies of your countrymen, and then say, what should be the reward of such sacrifices? Bid us and our posterity bow the knee, supplicate the friendship, and plow and sow and reap to glut the avarice of the men who have let loose on us the dogs of war, to riot in our blood, and hunt us from the face of the earth. If ye love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude, then the animating contest of freedom, go from us in peace. We ask not for your counsels or your arms. Crouch down and lick the hands which feed you, C.J. Pearson. May your chains sit lightly upon you, and may posterity forget that ye were our countrymen. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the Freedom Report podcast, broadcasting from Peculiar, Missouri. Again, we're going to be doing these shows right here from the heartland of the United States, from Missouri. So don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. You can find us at iTunes. Go to iTunes.com. If you don't have an Apple device and you don't like iTunes, you can also get us on the Android device Stitcher. So if you've got a mobile phone, download the Android device Stitcher. And of course, if you do have an iTunes device, you want to help us out, leave us a 5-star review. That helps us to spread the message. And of course, don't forget, go to purplepack.org/contest. Send us your best ideas, 5 great ideas for how to get Rand Paul elected president. And we will give 5 lucky winners $2,000 apiece. That's a $10,000 giveaway to help spread liberty all across the United States. Isn't that amazing? You can make money and get more liberty at the same time. So thanks very much, ladies and gentlemen, and don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.